I want us to have a special class because sometimes in life you get hit over the head, and the person who hit you over the head didn't even mean to do it. I was talking to someone the other day, and he says, "Do you know so-and-so?" So I said, "I'm not sure who you're talking about." So the person says, "No, no, don't you know?" So I said, "I'm not sure. Is it this person? Is it that person?" So he said, "No, I'm not talking about someone tall. I'm talking about someone short." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, your height." So I thought to myself, "Really? I never thought I was short. Okay, now I know I'm short." So he didn't even mean to tell me that. But it was an eye-opener to me. Right? I haven't been called shorty in a few decades. So it was, and he didn't even mean it badly. And I had another few interesting experiences that way recently, where people said things, and they said them innocently. They didn't mean to be hurtful, but they were eye-openers. So I got another one of those today, and I decided it's a real eye-opener to me, and I have to address it. I got to hear from someone who had studied here at Mechon Meir that we never addressed the topic here of priorities within halacha, and how much that the halacha actually addresses when I'm supposed to forego a mitzvah, when I'm supposed to compromise. What I understood is that we haven't addressed enough the actual practical application of Torah and halacha, and that was a real whopper. I felt like I just got smacked across the face. I said, "Okay. You know, that means we've been teaching theory and not practice." So I said, "I'm not going forward another class without pausing to address this point." Because I realized, okay, I've never really addressed it. To me, it was obvious, and that's wrong. You know, there's in teaching, they talk about the curse of knowledge. That sometimes when you approach a topic, there are aspects of the topic that to you are obvious because you've studied it from different angles, but your audience has no clue what you're talking about. And so I feel like this is a topic we really have to take a few minutes to discuss, because otherwise, what I understood is that a person can walk away and think, I understand there's the ideal of 613, and when I can do it, I'm going to do it, and when I can't, so I'll do what I can. But there is a value system within Torah. And there is also, within halacha, definitions of how far do I have to go in order to perform each mitzvah. This is defined in halacha. So let's take an example. I don't know if there's any diabetic here. If there is, I apologize. I don't mean to single you out. I don't know of anyone here having diabetes. So don't take it personally. As far as I know, there is no diabetic in the class. I want to take an example that burns me up every year anew. We approach Yom Kippur. And our experience has taught us that for many, most diabetics, there is a risk factor of fasting on Yom Kippur. So we know that fasting on Yom Kippur is a biblical commandment. You just learned Yuma. And we know that fasting on Yom Kippur is the major mitzvah of the day. That's the biblical mitzvah of the day. So much so that if a person would tell us, "You know what, I'm going to fast, but I have to pray, you know, it's Yom Kippur, and I might pass out during the prayer." So then we would tell him, "Stay in bed." And the person will say, but I'll have a horrible Yom Kippur if I stay in bed." And we'll say, "Right, but at least you'll be able to fast." And the person will say, but I'd rather be in shul. What kind of Yom Kippur will I have if I'm in bed?" Well, the halacha says that staying in bed is more important than going to shul. Staying in fasting on Yom Kippur is biblical. If you can do it, that's more important than all the other mitzvot of Yom Kippur put together.
Why is it so important to fast?
Why is a good question, but first let's understand what. The Torah says, V'initen nafshotechem, as he quoted earlier, it's a mitzvah doraita. It's the biblical mitzvah of the day. Praying on Yom Kippur is the concept of the day. It's rabbinic mitzvah of the day. It's not biblical. And then, every year, we run into the same scenario. There are diabetics. who connect to the mitzvah so well, they say, we're fasting Yom Kippur. And I tell them, I don't think you're allowed to. I want us to talk to your doctor. The classical ruling for a diabetic is no fasting on Yom Kippur. There are exceptions, people who have had their blood sugar level balanced for many years and their doctor is confident that they can fast on Yom Kippur. There are scenarios where you could argue there are exceptions, but they're the exception. The general rule is no fasting on Yom Kippur. That's the general rule. So again, every person has to ask their question, every person has to ask their doctor, every person has to take the information from the doctor to the rabbi and verify. And every year, I encounter numerous people who say, Rabbi, I'm not asking you. I didn't ask you. I'm fasting, I've done it before, I'm doing it again. And I tell them, I can give you the lectures I have on my computer. The MP3 files of lectures from the top doctors who are masters of diabetes. These are the people who are the heads of the departments for diabetes. And they'll tell you the statistics of how many diabetics die on Yom Kippur every year, how many diabetics go into shock and lose limbs on Yom Kippur, how many diabetics risk their life but pull out of it. Why don't you hear the numbers? The rabbis didn't just wake up one morning and say diabetics can't fast. They sat with the doctors in the hospitals, they understood the numbers, and based on that they came out with instructions. The scariest day of the year for me is Yom Kippur. And it's not because of the judgment of Yom Kippur. It's because I have to answer people the halacha of whether they should or should not fast on Yom Kippur. And I do not go to sleep the night after Yom Kippur until I have called every individual who I told they have to fast on Yom Kippur. Anyone who asked me the question, I write down their name, I write down their number, and I can't go to sleep until I've called every person back after Yom Kippur and I ask them, did you break your fast? How are you feeling? Who are the people that ask the question most? Women who are pregnant. So there it's a huge responsibility. Sometimes the answer is, yeah, you should fast on Yom Kippur. Here are the instructions. Here's what you have to pay attention to. Here's how you should prepare for Yom Kippur. Here's how you should break your fast after Yom Kippur. Here are the indicators. If anything, God forbid, happens on Yom Kippur, here's what you have to do in order to ensure you don't give birth too early or miscarry, God forbid. But at the end of the day, sometimes the answer is, yeah, you're obligated to fast on Yom Kippur. But you know what? These answers are not me pulling it out of a hat. There's a whole system. There's a system. There's a whole Talmud. And after the Talmud, there are commentaries and Shulchan Aruch. And then there's the modern day research. And we put it together and come up with a halachic answer. It's not a question of, oh, he had a bad day today. Don't ask him today. He's going to tell you to fast. You know, it doesn't work that way. And when we're not sure, we verify. I will very often spend the week before Yom Kippur on the phone with doctors to verify the reality of different patients. I had a patient 2 years ago. I don't even know the person. They called me from somewhere else in Israel. They had a complicated digestive issue. And they want to know if they're supposed to fast at all on Yom Kippur, fast a little bit. What the answer is, I was on the phone with the head of a department in the United States, sitting with a doctor, going over what would and wouldn't hurt the patient. And the doctor was arguing with me, saying there's nothing wrong with his condition and fasting. It'll cure him. It's good for him. It's healthy for him. Tell him to fast. Tell her to fast. It was a woman. Okay? It's not a question of what I would think. There's the medical aspect, there's the halachic aspect, but my point is the halacha addresses it. You feel like you're tired. You don't want to get up for shacharit. So sometimes you say, no, I don't have the strength. I'll work on myself. I should do it every day, but I don't have the strength. But sometimes the halacha says you don't have to get up. You know, the halacha addresses how much effort you have to invest to go and daven with a minyan. That's halacha and Shulchan Aruch. The halacha defines it for us. The halacha addresses how much effort we have to invest in finding a lulav, an esrog, in building a sukkah. How much do I have to invest? Let's take a scenario. Your relatives are visiting. There's a restaurant. The restaurant's not kosher. How far do you have to go to say, I'm not eating there? I didn't go to what, how far. I didn't. I'm not giving answers. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not. My point isn't what the answer is. My point is that it is addressed. That the Shulchan Aruch, the Halacha, addresses with regards to the gradation of mitzvot, how far I have to go. And this is where it's important, as we live through life, to learn, to ask. If we don't ask, we won't know. And as we ask, we start learning. And this is where I also stress the importance of finding a rabbi who has two components. Aside from that, he should know, he should be knowledgeable, that's obvious, but he should be accessible, so you can call him up and ask him, or SMS him, or email him. And he should have experience with Chozrim B'Tshuva and Gerim. Because part of what you have to factor in, for example, on the question of how much effort do you have to invest to go and daven with a minyan. So if you just give a formula, 18 minutes in the wrong, driving in the wrong direction. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. You didn't give an accurate formula. The formula is how much energy would you invest to travel 18 minutes in the wrong direction. You're headed home from work, and suddenly you have to drive back 18 minutes to go and catch a minyan. So that means 36 minutes total. 18 minutes the wrong direction, and then 18 minutes back. That's the sterile equation. But sometimes you promised your wife you're going to be there for her birthday, and you took off 2 hours from work, and you took off a day of work in order to be there for her birthday. Maybe you flew in to be there for her birthday. So then the calculation's totally different. Then we say, obviously this is worth that to you. So daven privately, because it's you'll say, but it's not 36 minutes, and I'll say, right, it's a gradation of effort. It's an example, evaluate based on that, the amount of effort. That's how much effort you have to invest to daven with a minyan. Sometimes a person says in his tshuva process, people have come and asked me, I'm going to go crazy if I daven 3 times a day with a minyan. I can't, leave me alone, I can't do it. So the answer is don't. Don't. The halacha doesn't demand that of you. But again, you have to understand the system and the hardships of a chozer b'tshuva or a ger. Again, it's not, you ask me technically, does every Jew have to daven 3 times a day with a minyan? Yes. But the halacha also says that there's an amount that I have to invest to make it there. When I was in first grade, our Rebbe did us a tremendous disservice. He wanted to tell us what Esav was like. So he said, Esav was the guy who didn't wear tzitzis because it was hot. That was his example of Esav. Esav took off his tzitzis because it was hot. So I spent the next decade or two thinking that if I take off my tzitzis because I'm hot, I'm Esav. Like that stayed in my mind. And then I learned the halacha, and the halacha says not that way. The halacha says, you don't have to wear tzitzis. It's a good thing to wear tzitzis. Every minute that you wear tzitzis, you're performing a mitzvah. Okay, I understand the weight. It's a good thing to do. You want to get biblical mitzvot, get biblical mitzvot. We all want to get. But again, there's a weight here. And if a person's going to be sweating, he won't be able to focus in his davening. He won't be able to focus in his learning. He's going to have palpitations because he's falling apart in the heat. So now what are you going to say? No, don't take it off. You're Asa, right? So that's the first grader. I'm saying it's a wrong thing to say. You can't say that. It's not true. There's no Aveira when a person takes off his tzitzis. Every minute he's wearing it, he's getting a mitzvah. It's not that when he's not wearing it, he's getting an Aveira. It's just not true. It's factually incorrect. There's no obligation every minute to wear tzitzis. Every minute you're wearing it, you get another mitzvah. Every second, that's great. It's a good thing to do. It's very recommended. Maybe you should wear 10, because then you get 10 mitzvahs every second. Our tzaddikim who do that. They do it privately. They do it if they have good air conditioning, or if they don't suffer from the heat or whatever. But there are people who do that. There's nothing wrong with that if they do it privately, if they're not bragging, right? If I'm showing everyone what a tzaddik I am, then it's questionable. But, okay. So again, this is an important point that this is where we go from the theoretical 613 mitzvot to the practical applications in life. In the practical applications of life, every mitzvah has a gradation, and we should find out. I mean, it's very important to find out, what am I supposed to do here? And your, our goal is that you learn it so that you don't have to ask all the time. You'll ask once, you'll ask twice, you'll ask three times, you'll get the hang of it, you'll start understanding the gradations and the weights, and then you won't ask anymore. Our goal is that you should be independent, that you should have the system. The system is a little bit complex, you know, it's under different scenarios, the system demands different things from us. And again, it's a very important idea to my mind that every student has a rabbi they feel connected to. Because otherwise people can really make big mistakes, and sometimes the big mistakes are that people are too stringent. It's not always that people make big mistakes that they're too lenient. Sometimes a person is going to fight World War III over something that's really not relevant. I got an email from someone, their parents don't keep Torah and mitzvot at all. Now, he invited them to join him for Shabbos, and the parents said, yeah, great, we'll join you. I had this personally. I was on the train, and as I'm sitting on the train, someone suddenly hugs me. I turn around and I see this big lock of hair hugging me. It's great to see you, and I don't know who it is yet. So you want to be warm, right? Who's telling me it's great to see me? It's great to see you too. When the person lets go, I see it's a cousin of mine. So I talk to him for a few minutes, and then I say, you know, we'd love to see you for Shabbos. He says, great. We exchange phone numbers. He gets off the train. Wonderful. I send an SMS, and I say, nope, so what Shabbos works for you? So he says, I'll talk to my wife. I decide I'm not going to let go. I send another SMS a day later. Did you talk to your wife? This Shabbos, I checked with my wife. This Shabbos works great for us. So he writes back, yeah, sounds like a great idea. Do you want us to show up for the Friday night meal or the Shabbos day meal? Which one? Obviously he meant he's going to drive in and drive out, right? So he doesn't live anywhere near where we live. It's an hour drive. Okay, so that's what this guy asked me. He said he invited his parents for the Shabbos meal. He invited them for Shabbos. And now they answered him. They said, great idea, we'll come for a Friday night dinner. Which is another way of saying, and then we'll pack into the car and drive back home. So he's about to start World War III with them, right? There's no way you guys are going to transgress Shabbos just to enjoy a Shabbos meal in my house. But is that right? This is the first time they're open to eating a Shabbos meal and seeing what a Shabbos meal is. They've never had it. And if they're not going to drive to his house, won't they just drive to the movies and drive somewhere else? Are they driving more because they're coming to his Shabbos meal? So very often we turn a blind eye when people... there's a difference between telling someone, come to my house for the Shabbos meal, when you know they're going to drive in and drive out. And that's a more difficult question. And even there, sometimes we turn a blind eye. But over here, he invited them for the full Shabbos. They said they'll come for the Friday night meal. Now, does he have to back out? Does he have to make World War III? They're prepared already. So again, the halacha addresses it. The halacha addresses it, and when we see the halacha, so then we know how to approach it. And again, this comes up all the time. I recommend you get a notebook, because you won't even fill the notebook. If you start asking questions, you will see that after two or three pages, the questions repeat themselves. You know the answers. There are not that many questions. I just got a question this week that I got last year, 2 years ago also. A person's going to visit their relatives who don't keep kosher at all. How does he manage in their kitchen? Well, that's a classical question. So I said, let me go find the email from a year or two ago, and then I'll just forward you that. You'll get all the details of covering the grate, of the pot, of not leaving sour cream that's open. Buy small packs of sour cream. You have to make sure to use things that, if they dip their spoon into it, as they're in the middle of eating their non-kosher meat, your sour cream is not kosher, you won't be able to eat anymore. So there are all kinds of tips and practical things. Fine, how many pages is that? Not even one page. You covered all the halachot, maximum a page and a half, but you don't even need that much to cover all of it. You will see that most of the halachot, you won't fill the notebook, and you'll cover it and you'll know it, and over time you'll learn the system yourself. But you have to realize that the system addresses the challenges of life not working exactly the way the halacha wants it to. How much do I have to invest? Where do I compromise? And it's not what we would think always. Very often it's not what we would think. Okay, so that's a very important aspect of halacha. So I stopped tonight just to address that point. Let's...